This is The Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells, and today we are speaking with Clint Betts, founder and editor-in-chief of Beehive Startups. Beehive Startups is an independent media organization focused on Utah's startup and tech ecosystem. Clint and his team are also the driving force behind an exciting event for entrepreneurs, investors, and the broader Utah community that takes place January 29th through the 31st at the Gateway Center. Called Start SLC, the three-day event is free, open to the public, and includes multiple sessions designed to bring entrepreneurs, want-to-be entrepreneurs, investors, and the broader community together. The experience culminates with a $250,000 pitch competition judged by a who's who panel of Utah venture capitalists. Clint, welcome to The Bottom Line.
Thank you, Doug. It's good to be here.
So let's start with Beehive Startups. What is it and what do you hope to accomplish with Beehive Startups?
Well, it's a great question. I don't think we initially, when we first launched Beehive Startups, it was almost like a year ago today, right? It was like the end of November in 2013 is when we initially launched.
Congratulations. That's
yeah,
it.
Right?
Many startups don't make it to their first year anniversary.
And I think when we initially launched it, and I'll kind of give you the story behind Beehive Startups. I was working at iZenny, which is a custom software development firm. They're headquartered down in Provo. And what they do is they build startups, right? It's their primary clients are startups. They help them kind of build an MVP, which is a minimum viable product, that the startup will then go, you know, to a VC or an angel and get some funding. iZenny will help them transition to an in-house team eventually after they build the product out the rest of the way.
So iZenny primarily focuses on the programming.
Yeah, on the software development and the tech side of things, right? They're kind of, in some ways, like an outsourced CTO for these startups who can't afford to bring, you know, 15 developers in-house to get a project done in 3 months, you know what I mean? And then you have nothing, you don't know what to do with those developers, you know, 3 months later because you don't need them anymore. So so iZenny builds startups, right? That's what they do. And we had some clients like there's Weave, who recently came out of Y Combinator. iZenny, that was a client of iZenny's. And they've raised, I think, $7 million now. And, you know, they're rocking it and doing this amazing job.
And they focus on software for
for the dental industry, right? And so when they came out of Y Combinator, obviously everybody knew about them. But a year ago, no one knew who Weave was except for us, right? We were like, how come no one knows about Weave? How come more people in the community aren't, you know, writing about these cool up-and-coming budding startups that are eventually going to turn into something awesome? How come no one's covering it in any meaningful way? And so we decided to do it ourselves and kind of to go full circle. We didn't expect to be like this to spin out and be its own company. We just thought, hey, let's write about startups, you know, maybe two or three times a week and see what happens. And we kind of quickly realized it was more than that. Just the amount of support and feedback we were getting from the community, it was like, oh, all right.
You have gotten a really positive reception from the community, which is great to see. And when I think about how you just described Beehive Startups, there's a number of common points with Silicon Slopes,
right,
which Josh James has started and has driven. How do you see yourselves as being complementary to Silicon Slopes? Because there's definitely room for both of you, and you both are doing a great service for the state.
Oh yeah, I think there's definitely room for both of us, and there's probably room for other. You know, I don't think there's such thing as competition when it comes to community building. You know what I mean? We're kind of all in the same. We're all in the same ecosystem. We're all kind of have similar goals. I think kind of the way we differentiate from Silicon Slopes, and I think they would say this, and we're really friendly with those guys. We do events with, and I think Josh obviously has contributed to Utah's ecosystem probably more than
enormously.
Any singular entrepreneur. You know what I mean? So,
and for the audience, Josh is also the founder of Omniture, which sold to Adobe for what, $1.8 billion in 2009, and now he's leading Domo Ventures, which is a big data play. He's raised a ton of money, almost a $1 billion valuation, based here in Utah as well.
Yeah. So Josh is this incredible entrepreneur, right? So I think the way we differentiate from them, though, is they market more to out of state to try to attack talent to come to these, to try to attract talent to come to these bigger tech companies here, like Domo, like Qualtrics, like Pluralsight. And their kind of goal, their whole goal is to kind of market to out of state people to what's happening here in Utah. Whereas BI Startups is very, very much a community oriented effort. It's very much all about building the ecosystem within here, within the state, and seeing what comes out of it, and kind of that, and that's kind of the whole idea behind Start SLC, this big event we're doing, is let's try to get every single member of Utah startup community all in one place for 3 days and just kind of see what happens. And I think it kind of organically spreads out, you know, you kind of market out of state unintentionally a little bit, which is something that we found interesting. Like when you look at our newsletter list and kind of traffic views of who's visiting, it's a lot of it is out of state, and it's kind of, yeah. And I think originally we were surprised by that.
But Utah's on the radar screen now, yeah, right? And
absolutely.
There's a lot of folks that are watching some of the big, there's not many billion-dollar companies that are created nationwide. And you just named, you know, three names. We just talked about three names that are all billion-dollar companies, which is really quite remarkable when you think about the population base that we have. Billion-dollar companies per capital, we've got to rank near the top of that.
Oh, yeah. We're in an interesting time right now here in Utah, right? I think 2014 is kind of a seminal banner year for Utah startups and tech, because you have a bunch of these companies like Pluralsight, who I mentioned earlier, who's like an online training startup, and Inside Sales and Qualtrics and HireVue, like these startups who've actually been around for like over 10 years. Are kind of coming of age all at the same time, and they're all raising super large rounds all at the same time. And it's kind of a great time to be a part, you know.
The next 2 years could be really interesting. I think at least one of those, I have no information that the public doesn't have, but I'd be surprised if at least one of those companies doesn't go public, which is a big publicity gainer for not just the company, but for the state. So I think the next 2 years is going to be really interesting.
I think for sure you'll see one go public, maybe two. And I think for sure you'll see one of them get acquired by a really big tech company.
You know, what's nice about that is then there not only do we have the founders that have put 10, 15 years of hard work into these companies, but we have the entire team that's there. They've gotten the experiences, and now they're going to have some liquidity. They're going to, through the IPO, they're going to have a chance to sell some of their shares, maybe all of their shares. And then the question is, what do they do with that? And what we've seen in other ecosystems is these entrepreneurs, these team members, tend to start other companies and invest in other companies. So it could be the trickle-down effect could be really positive.
Well, so I think you're seeing it now with Omniture. People who used to work at Omniture with Josh are now spinning off and doing their own startups. In fact, we just wrote about one yesterday called Client Success. He ran he was vice president of business development at Omniture, and now he's the CEO of some SaaS client management system.
In fact, Peak Ventures around where they did Peak and other investors did $1 million investment in Client Success.
Yeah, Peak put a lot of money into them, and Josh is an active investor here in Utah. I think Josh put $250,000 into that startup.
Nice. Now there's going to be a lot of positive effects coming out of hopefully these big successes in the next couple of years. I know you mentioned earlier Izini, and you've got two partners that you work with there, Gabe and Jordan Gunderson.
Right.
So you were working there. How did the idea of Beehive Startups between the three of you? How did that start to germinate, and then how did it develop into here's a business?
Well, I don't know if it's developed into here's a business even now yet. We still have to figure that stuff
developing.
Out. But yeah, it's developing, obviously. I think we kind of struggled with it to start. Like, how much time do we want to put into this thing that's not contributing to the bottom line, right? Izini is a service-based company, and you're only making money when you're working on a client's project. And to actually pull resources away from Izini and say, hey, let's do this thing where we don't know what's going to happen, is kind of remarkable that we kind of So originally, like, I pushed for it for probably a month or two, you know what I mean? And they were, it was kind of delay.
So
we'll
it was
see,
really
we'll
your passion, your idea.
Well, to start, right? So my background is, like, I have a degree in journalism. I have kind of that whole entrepreneurial focus. And I just saw the need, like I was saying before, that no one was covering, you know, these up-and-coming younger startups here in Utah. And so I had kind of prodded and pushed them for a little bit, you know, early on. But really, to their credit, and they deserve a lion's share of the credit of, you know, Beehive Startups' success, is they're probably the least risk-adverse entrepreneurs I've ever met. They don't – risk is like nothing to them. They'll just, like, put their chips on the table, you know, go all in – like once a month, and it's like this incredible thing to say, and they usually always win. And so the fact that they were willing to bet on Beehive Startups, the fact that they were willing to pull resources away from like this incredible business that they've built to, you know, on like a prayer and like who knows what's going to happen, is kind of a huge credit to them. And it's been pretty fun.
So it's you, Gabe, and Jordan. Are there other members of your team as well?
We have a part-time writer on staff. We have like a sponsorship coordinator now, which is kind of interesting. But he also, you know, will split time between iZenny and BI Startups. And we also have a team of freelance writers who they're not actually employees of BI Startups, but they do, you know, freelance work for us.
Okay. And your sponsorship person, is that somebody that's helping you with the fundraising? Because it takes money to do all these things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we're learning that the hard way. We decided to do Start SLC without thinking about how much it would cost. And so now we're like, oh, we've got to raise money for this type of stuff. Because we'd been doing events, you know, like these monthly events, and we would just find some local company to, you know, give us some money for food, you know what I mean? Basically, we'd say to tell them to buy the food and come to the event. But Start SLC is this whole different animal where you need, like, to pay for, like, event insurance and the space itself. Right. Stuff, and we're not event planners. We never put on, like, a huge event like the one we're planning the end of January. So, yeah, we've launched this sponsorship program to kind of cover everything that Beehive Startups is doing. We want to be more than just a blog, right? Which is kind of what we are now. Right now, you go to Beehive Startups to kind of read the latest happenings in Utah startup scene. Whereas probably 2 or 3 months from now, and again, thanks to iZenny and their, you know, amazing ability to build software and build websites, you'll go to Beehive Startups and it'll have a company directory, a job board, this community section where, like, you would be on there and you could, like, do mentor hours and stuff. So, yeah, we want to be kind of more of a platform for all these different things, still remaining true and having at our core the whole journalism side of things. But we want to be more than just that. We want to really, really be like the hub and for Utah startups and tech.
Is it fair for people that have heard of TechCrunch, which is really, you know, it's on the coast. It's really big on the coast, on the East Coast and the West Coast, really tech information on what's happening. They would probably frown on me saying on the coast, but most of their stories are companies that are based on the West Coast or the East Coast. Is it fair for me to compare what they do? They also hold events, TechCrunch Disrupt, which is probably going to be similar to Start SLC.
Right.
Is it fair to compare you guys to TechCrunch?
So I don't think we would mind it as much as... But
if you ended up like a TechCrunch, you'd be really happy with both the mission that you're accomplishing as well as the business that you're building.
I don't know, actually. So I think TechCrunch obviously is this massive success. It's kind of like the source for everything happening in Silicon Valley, especially
it's like the first press release a tech company puts out when they raise money or they launch their product.
And you kind of just brought up my problem with TechCrunch is the whole press release aspect of it. It feels like there's not a lot of journalism, and this could be way off base, right? But it feels like it's kind of rewritten press releases. And that's kind of the problem with tech journalism in general. It's not, you know, limited to TechCrunch. It's the fact that there's, and these reporters, I can't even imagine being a TechCrunch writer and how many people are sending you press releases every day. You're probably sifting through, you know, 100 a day and just trying to figure out And
well, once a week, TechCrunch, I'm exaggerating, but fairly frequently, one of the TechCrunch reporters will write a piece saying, if you want to send us a press release, here's how to do it the right way. And do I remember correctly, when I went to your website, I think you actually say, please don't send us press releases.
So BI Startups has a rule that we don't publish press releases. And we won't even read your press release if you send it to us. We'll you know, actually say, hey, let's show us your website and let's schedule a time to set up an interview. That's a lot more valuable way to spend our time.
And why is that important to you?
I think it just goes back to maintaining an independent, like, honest voice within the community where you're not beholden to, like, some, like, corporate speak or some, like, PR department. And you're really, like, telling the stories of these founders in a unbiased, unfiltered way. And I think tech journalism, like, nationwide needs that. There's very little of that going on. And it's this crazy thing. So when I was in journalism school, I thought for sure I'd write about politics or sports. Those are, like, the only two things I could ever even think about writing about, right? And then I started working at iZenia and kind of, like, figuring, you know, this whole tech and startup scene out. And I was like, man, there's this whole... It's a super interesting space, right? But no one is covering it in the way sports and politics is covered, right? In a way where, like, people are held accountable for their actions. And
it's a great analogy, actually, the way politics, I mean, if a politician sent out a press release and a political reporter just spewed that out, that reporter would have a very short career. Same thing with sports, right? You want that independent voice. You follow certain reporters because you like how they cover the sport.
Yeah, can you imagine? And so I won't name names here, but we've actually, like, published, like, kind of mundane funding stories, right? So we'll say this startup raised X, and it's probably a 5-paragraph story. We hopped on the phone with the founder, and we said, hey, tell us what this money's going to be used for. Tell us about your company. What's the next step? Who was involved? That type of stuff, right? Really, like, basic stories. And we've actually had founders – I've had founders call me and say, hey, can we change this line in your story? Can we change this? I don't know if we want to put the funding in the headline. And you would never, so if you did that in, like, politics, for example, and called up the reporter, that's a story in and of itself that you called up a reporter and wanted to change the previous story. And so I think that mentality in tech and startups, it's just not as developed. And the whole journalism type of thing isn't as developed in this space.
Interesting. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Clint Betts, founder and editor-in-chief of Beehive Startups. So we've talked about what's missing in the journalistic coverage of technology here in Utah. What do you think is missing in the entrepreneurial ecosystem? What do you hope to see developed over the next 6 months to 2 years in the ecosystem that maybe is not there or is not there as strongly as you think it should be?
So I'd like to see more of these entrepreneurs who've had major wins actually coming to the events and actually participating and mentoring this younger up-and-coming generation. I think that more than anything would be super helpful. And we're starting to see that a little bit more. I mean, 6 months ago, we didn't see a lot of that. And I think already, just in the past 6 months, we have those kind of bigger names coming out to events. But I think we could always use more. I think we could mentorship and these guys who have already won giving back to the community that, you know, where they came from and where they have found success, I think is something that would be awesome.
I agree with that. And my sense is the desire to give back is there. The challenge is they're getting asked all the time for these different events. And if there was a way to kind of leverage their time, for instance, maybe videotaping the sessions and having it on Beehive Startups. I'll give you, for instance, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm a huge fan of what's called iTunes University, which is a free app on your iPhone. And you can take courses or you can attend classes at the top universities throughout the country for free. Stanford has a great entrepreneurship class, the Stanford Entrepreneurial Thought Leader Series. It's free. You can get it on your podcast. They've also got a class now that Sam Altman, who's the president of Y Combinator, which is a big accelerator in the Bay Area, is teaching. And truthfully, it's really not a class. It's really Sam and his famous friends.
Right.
But the nice thing about this is it's tremendous leverage. If you look at the number of people that are downloading these podcasts, that are attending the class, it's not just the 100 kids that are fortunate enough to be in the class live, but it's the tens of thousands of people, not just nationwide, but worldwide. Is there a way that we could help better leverage the time of the successful entrepreneurs so they could say, you know what, one evening a month, one evening every other month, I'm happy to do this event, but it needs to have more impact?
I think so. And I think you're right that these guys get reached out to so often. And a lot of the times I think the things that they're being reached out about are not valuable to them. I think you have to make it valuable to the person that you're asking, like, here's why you want to come to this event. This is going
to
be valuable.
You're trying
not
to hire
only
programmers
for,
and we're going right. to have a lot of programmers there.
Or, you know, even more basic, like you're doing this thing, you know, maybe you're raising money or something, like if you're Josh and you're like in the thick of it, you know what I mean? And a little publicity is going to help you in some way, or you're looking to hire, or you're looking for anything, you know what I mean? You have to make it valuable to them. And even if it's just like, so we do these events where it's just 10 people going out for lunch and everyone's actively involved in something and you have to have been, you know, invited in order to even show up. Those are really valuable to these types of people. But for like the bigger events, I think you're onto something, and I think Sam Altman's onto something. I think that startup school thing that he did is amazing, and maybe BI Startups has actually been thinking about doing something similar here in Utah with like these successful entrepreneurs. Each one, prominent entrepreneur every week coming in and kind of telling their story and focusing on like a specific subject, whether it's funding or hiring or whatever it is. And I don't know. So it's going to be hard to beat, you know, Sam Altman's lineup. It's the problem.
But Utah's got its own lineup.
Right.
And the fact that if you're a Utah entrepreneur, learning from another Utah entrepreneur in some way is special, and it's important for you to see it can, with a lot of hard work and a little bit of luck, or maybe a lot of luck, it can happen here as well. So I love that idea, and I hope you get a chance to put that together. You know, New York City has really gained a lot of traction as an entrepreneurial ecosystem. There were some business leaders there that said, we really should be a powerhouse. And 7-10 years ago, they were not. And there's a couple players that have really moved the needle. Fred Wilson, famously of Union Square right. Ventures, has given a lot of publicity to what's going on there, a lot of successes out of there. But they actually brought in somebody to help them build that ecosystem. And I forget the gentleman's name. But he came up with really four things that he feels helps drive the ecosystem. One is what you just mentioned, the local entrepreneurs giving back. A couple of the others surprised me. One was a common workspace, the availability of a common workspace. I'm not a big fan of incubators. Accelerators are different than incubators. Y Combinator, Beehive. Not Beehive, I'm sorry. Boom Startup is an right. accelerator, not an incubator, where it's really you're there for 90 days. It's a lot of mentoring. And then you're kicked out. You're not there for a year in a cozy office environment. So I was surprised by the need and the power of common workspace. Also, something as simple. One of the four items that he listed was the role of social media. And in particular, having a common Twitter handle where everything can be posted, where it's very easy for the startup founders to know what's going on in the ecosystem. Beehive Startups is a website. What is your social media strategy? And do you agree that that's a really powerful, important piece to the ecosystem?
So it's a powerful and important piece of what we do. I can say that of Beehive Startups. I think social media is probably where like 80% of our traffic comes from.
What's your Twitter handle?
At Beehive Startups.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so people can sign up and then they'll get the push notifications via Twitter.
Yeah, you can follow us on Twitter or Facebook. We're on all those things. But I think you bring up an interesting point with this co-working spaces. So I get confused with incubators and accelerators and co-working spaces. I know the difference between an accelerator, but I don't know and the other two, but an incubator and a co-working space, I don't know if they're the same thing. I think those lines get a little blurred a little bit. But you're seeing, like, I think there's 4 or 5 co-working spaces popping up here in Salt Lake City, which is awesome. There's one just right across the street from, you know, your studio here called Church and State, where these couple of entrepreneurs actually bought an old church here in Salt Lake City, and they're renovating it. And it's going to be packed with entrepreneurs and different startups. And these, they already have a coding school in there called DevPoint Labs. And I think it's going to be awesome. We'll see how it turns out, you know, 5 years from now, if people are still doing co-working spaces, but there seems to be a lot of people trying it here in Utah.
As I said, I was surprised that was on the short list. That this guy then went over to London. London hired him to help build the ecosystem there. And London's had that re-energizing of their entrepreneurial ecosystem. And what he said was, you know, he really just focused on these 4 things. And the one that surprised me the most, as you point out as well, is the importance of the co-working space. You know, Park City just launched a co-working space, 9 months ago, and it's been an amazing hub. Frankly, it surprised me how critical that's been to getting everybody together and pulling in the same direction up in Park City. We had Rob Coons of Boom Startup, right, and Jeremy Lund, who's running the shared workspace. Their mission is broader, but Jeremy Lund started, along with Dan McFunn and a couple other guys, Pando Labs, which is what they're calling it up in Park City. And it's really been very well received, which was surprising, and it's great to see. I want to transition over to Start SLC. It's a big event that's coming. But before we go there, I want to talk a little bit about your journey. So you mentioned earlier you were a journalism student. As part of my research for today's interview, I came across an article. You ended up at Azini, but you took a little bit of time to start your own business in the deli industry, of all things. Tell us about Clint's Deli Shop.
Yeah, so
Clint's Place, right? Isn't that what it was called?
It was called Clint's Place, actually. It was a small deli my wife and I owned when we were, I think, 21. We bought this deli, and really, and this is the honest truth, I can say this now. I used to lie about this back then. But the only reason why I bought it is because I could. It's because it was like, and not because I had the money to buy it. Like, I worked out like some financing deal where I was paying like the previous owner every month and stuff. But just because I had worked out that deal is the reason why I did it. And I had worked at delis like through high school at Gandolfo's, which is a local deli shop here. And I wasn't ever like particularly like a sandwich like connoisseur or anything. It just like kind of fell into my lap, this deli. And we ended up running it for 4 years. And I learned so much about business and entrepreneurship. And like, so we probably had 10 or 12 employees, and making payroll every 2 weeks was always like the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. I mean, every 2 weeks, it's like this really frightening, are we going to make payroll type of thing? And you don't make a lot of money in the deli business.
I was going to say, you probably had hourly employees that were making more a year than you were.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like our manager easily made more than, you know, I ever made, you know, out of that thing. But it was a good learning experience for, you know, how to run. I always say, like, if you can run a deli, you can run any business, because, you know, all the components are there, like the sales, the marketing, the customer interaction, how to retain customers, all that type of stuff. So it was really interesting and really fun, but I never thought that that's what I would be doing for a living. I never thought, why don't I go open like 5 more of these things and just be a deli owner? I've always been interested in writing for some reason. I've always kind of had a knack for it. And I eventually I just said, enough is enough. Let's sell this thing. And we were lucky enough to sell it. And this was like right in the middle of the recession in like 2008, 2009. And went back to school, got a journalism degree, and yeah.
You know, I think doing what you're doing, it's important that you had a period of time where you were in the shoes of an entrepreneur and you had all the stresses that you just shared, making payroll, figuring out, you know, how are you going to survive another month? Because those are very real worries that are easy to read about. It's a much different thing to actually experience it and live it. So I was really glad when I stumbled on that article. It's like, here's something I didn't know about Clint. let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk some more with Clint Betts, founder and editor-in-chief of Beehive Startups. Welcome back to The Bottom Line on KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Today we're speaking with Clint Betts, founder and editor-in-chief of Beehive Startups. So let's transition. Let's talk about the big event that's happening at the end of January at the Gateway. Start SLC. Share with us what your vision is for Start SLC and just kind of lay the groundwork for what that event is.
So I think the original idea behind Start SLC was just to create this festival for anyone who is even remotely involved in startups. You don't have to be a founder. You don't have to be a hacker. You don't have to be, you know, a designer. It's not an event tailored to one specific track. There'll be multiple tracks happening all at the same time. There'll be design events right next to hacker events, right next to founder events, right next to a kids family code boot camp. And all of these like kind of interesting things. We wanted to just make it kind of and there's actually going to be like live music there as well. We wanted to have it be like this festival atmosphere where everyone would just come, have fun, celebrate Utah startup ecosystem and the community that we've built and we're continuing to build, and kind of just see what came out of it, what connections and what collisions came out of that, and make it as fun and awesome as possible. It was the original idea.
Yeah, I think as you describe it, I can see your unique signature on that type of event. And I was a little surprised, and I think some people in our audience a little surprised, about the music piece of it. But yet it's not unheard of. There's a big event down in Texas called South by Southwest. It's a music festival. It's a film festival. And they, 10 years ago, added an innovation festival. And it's the meeting of all three of those that I think has really made it successful. Why is the music piece important to you on that?
So we just want to get creative, interesting people all in one location. The music piece, it's really, I mean, we have no grand plans to be a South by Southwest or anything like that. If it always just remained as, you know, a 4,000 or 5,000 people event, we would be fine with that, right? But I think the music piece was important to us because conferences, and this isn't really a conference, right? But like business conferences and stuff like that get a little tedious, they get a little boring, and say you don't want to go to like any of the events that are the next hour, you can just go listen to some music. And just having musicians around and artists, I mean, we're having like a gallery stroll of you know, artists who, you know, are working every day and painting things and stuff. Just, I mean, if you're a programmer, your mind thinks along the same lines as like someone who's a painter. You know what I mean? We're in this business, in the startup and tech industry, you're paying people to think. You're not paying people to like be on like an assembly line. You know what I mean? So you want to surround them with other people who think. And I don't think it really matters like how they utilize, you know, their brain power. It's the fact that they're, you know, out there like creating unique and interesting, innovative things wherever it is. So we're having like bloggers come, like really prominent bloggers are coming and to Start SLC, and craft breweries are coming, like anyone in the maker movement. So it's a lot more than tech, and it's a lot more than, you know, just one specific community. It's kind of the melding of all of it.
So let's talk. And first, that all makes a lot of sense. Really, the focus is on creativity versus just the tech side of things. And as you describe it, I'm really glad somebody on your team had the idea to make that much broader. And the fact that Izini and you and Gabe and Jordan have been in this space and you get that creativity is a really important piece, I think, is going to add a special flavor to what you guys are doing. So there's a lot of space, unfortunately, now available at the Gateway. You're holding this at the Gateway Center, which is where the Apple Store used to be, the big shopping center, outdoor right. shopping center. And it gives the nice thing about that is it gives you a venue to hold a bunch of different events. You mentioned earlier you're out fundraising. So if somebody's interested in sponsoring something like this, and you also probably are interested in talking to people that can lead interesting events.
Oh, yeah.
What type of events? You mentioned several of them, but are there some gaps that you'd like to reach out to the community and say, hey, we'd like somebody that has expertise in this area. What are the areas that you'd like to fill up?
So I don't think we want to be too specific with that. I think if you're interested in throwing an event at Start SLC, it has something vaguely to do with startups or entrepreneurship, we're probably open to the idea. Events that are happening right now, there's going to be live podcasts. There's going to be Launch Up, and which is something Jeremy Hanks does, who's the founder of Doba. Once a month, he does this event where three kind of up-and-coming startups will pitch their idea in front of an audience, and they'll get feedback, kind of what 1 Million Cups is, but it's turned into. So we have those types of events. There's panels. There's a hackathon. Obviously, there's the pitch competition, which has probably gotten the most press to this point. There's going to be the Utah Startup Awards. There's going to be really prominent speakers, speakers from out of state, entrepreneurs from out of state, as well as kind of the prominent people here in the state who will be speaking. There's a lot of different events going on. And I think if you're interested in holding an event, you just or sponsoring either one, you just go to startslc.com, and kind of all that information is available there.
Great. And the nice thing is, my sense of how you're doing things is it's very collaborative. You mentioned it earlier, and your path and my path crossed because Gavin Christensen knew about you. We talked with Gavin here at the station a month ago, 6 weeks ago. Gavin's a good friend of mine, and he was saying, you guys really should talk to Clint, not necessarily to have you on air, but just you're doing some really interesting stuff, and you're doing it in a way that's building community. And Gavin's about building community. I'm about building community. And as we've gotten together, that's been one of the nice surprises for me is just your focus on it's not necessarily about Beehive Startups getting the credit or being successful. It's really about doing something for the community. So this is a labor of love. I thank you for doing that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so, and you kind of lose if you make it all about one particular organization anyways. I don't think we would accomplish anything that we've set out to accomplish.
Certainly not a big event like you're doing at the Gateway. That takes a whole community to put together.
Yeah, I mean, it's powered. I would start SLC is very much powered by the community. BI Startups plays a role in that, certainly, but it's very much, I mean, we have even the other two like directors of the event aren't even like from iZenny. We have Stephen Walter, who's a lawyer at Shumway Van and Hansen. He's a really great startup lawyer. And Mike Templeman, who's the founder and owner of Foxtel Marketing. And he's this great marketing firm. So even like at the director level of people who are really helping and pushing this and like spending a lot of their week making Start SLC happen, it's a very diverse, interesting group that kind of comes at it from all these different angles. Yeah, BI definitely couldn't pull off this type of event on our own.
It's a big event. I'm looking forward to it. Is there a piece of the community that you'd like more support from for Start SLC?
I don't know if there's a specific group that, we want more support from more than the other. We just want support from everyone, not even support as much as just come to the event and come check it out. And I think the interesting and kind of the draw for this event, other than like, if you're pitching in the pitch competition, there's a chance you could win like $150,000, right? But
that's a
nice incentive for anybody. But outside of like the pitch competition, I think the draw for people to spend those 2.5 days down at the Gateway, and we're also holding some events like at some of these co-working spaces we mentioned earlier. But the draw is you're going to run into some people you otherwise would have never met had you gone to just your typical user group or marketing group or founder group or whatever you do every month. You're not going to run into those same people at Start SLC. They'll all be there, but you're going to be running into, these hackers, a really cool musician, a really cool, founder that you've never met before. And it's just, I think more than anything, it's like this melting pot of Utah startup community that I think will be the draw for people to come and just kind of see what's going on.
Is that, I haven't looked at the what days those dates fall on. Is that a Thursday, Friday, Saturday? Is there a weekend day involved in that?
Yeah, it's January 29th through the 31st. The 29th is a Thursday. Okay. It actually doesn't kick off until Thursday night, and it goes all the way till Saturday.
Saturday night. This is going to be fun. So let's talk about the pitch competition, which is, as you say, is getting the most press. And it's going to, I would think, be the culmination of the event. I think anybody that's interested is going to be sure that they want to at least see part of that competition. For people that aren't familiar, what is a pitch competition and what does that process look like for Start SLC?
So a pitch competition is where you go, you pitch a startup idea or a startup you're currently working on to a panel of judges. And there's usually a first, second, and third place prize. I think typically here in Utah, these types of pitch competitions, you'll get, you know, maybe like a 10 grand first prize, somewhere around those lines, right? If you win, especially when you're talking like these, I think they're mainly done like at schools, like through BYU.
BYU just had the Innovation Awards, which actually one of the companies at the Park City Accelerator, Link, which is designing smart vents for your house. You know how you always have one room that's hot and one room that's cold. They're working to solve that. They're in the Park City Accelerator, and they BYU's innovation program or contest was just a couple weeks ago, and they came home with a grand prize on that. The nice thing about what you're doing is it's not just the first, second, third, but there's the top award that the judges give out as well as the second place that the judges give out. But you also have an audience award. What's the audience award?
Yeah, the audience. So the winner, and it's important to note that they don't actually just get $150,000 cash, right? I mean, you do, but it's an investment. It's a small investment. It's an entrepreneur-friendly convertible note with no cap, right? But still, it's, and I think that's kind of even a bigger draw, though, to have like 10 of the 10 biggest investors in Utah invested in your company and invested in your success is probably a bigger draw and more valuable to a startup than even the money, because they're going to make sure that you get more money and they're going to make sure that you're connected to the right people, right?
I mean, we mentioned Gavin Christensen earlier. His firm's one of them. Greg Warnock, Mercado Partners, which normally does later stage investments. Greg's involved in this. Are all of the venture capitalists, are all of them Utah-based? And is that an important piece? Or are you open to outside of Utah investors participating?
So they're all Utah-based. And so we have 10 judges, the 10 investors who are a part of this, and they're all Utah-based. I don't know if it was a requirement. It's just, you know, we only know Utah-based investors.
It worked out
really
that way.
Yeah.
And which is really nice because that's where the $250,000, quote-unquote, prize money investment is coming from. And I was quite impressed. That's a lot of money to raise, especially, as you mentioned, it's a very entrepreneurial-friendly investment. I mean, they basically don't know what valuation they don't for their investment. They don't know what percent of the company they're going to end up getting. They could end up owning 5% of the company. They could end up owning less than 1%. It really depends on the next round.
And it's like 5% split 10 ways, right? So it's almost like, you know, who knows where they're going to be. For them, I think it's about building the community. We're seeing this now. From the investor community, from entrepreneurs, where there's more of a, they want to give back more now, and they want to see how they can help build the ecosystem. And I think it's kind of selfless and kind of cool what they're doing. It's then the fact that they decided to do it at Start SLC was just awesome. And Gavin, I have to say, Gavin has always been a huge supporter, and I don't think we would have pulled this off without Gavin. Gavin is a huge piece of Utah's ecosystem.
He's a good guy. Community's fortunate to have him. The community's fortunate to have you. Our guest this morning has been Clint Betts. He's the founder and editor-in-chief of Beehive Startups. To find out more about the three-day Start SLC event being held January 29th through the 31st, visit startslc.com. Clint, thank you for your contributions to the Utah entrepreneurial ecosystem. And thank you for sharing your story with us today on The Bottom Line.
Thank you, Doug. I love this show.
Today's show was recorded at the KCPW Studios on Library Square and produced by Ross Chambliss. You can also hear my extended interviews on KCPW's website and on iTunes, or you can follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @KCPWBottomLine. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.